discretion is advised.
Live from Glasgow, Scotland, it's time for the revolution in professional wrestling radio as Robert and Kenny prepare to take you inside the ropes.
Monday, the 27th of June, and you're listening to Inside the Ropes. It's our Monday show, although there is a good chance, obviously, you'll be listening to this at some other day this week. That is absolutely fine. This is just the day that we happen to be recording it. We are a couple of hours away from this week's Monday Night Raw, so if you're listening to us before Raw, hello! We hope this is a pleasant distraction for you while we chat news and this past week's NXT episode. If you are watching us after, listening to us after Monday Night Raw, then I'm sure we might say some things while we're talking about the news that you'll laugh at, because we'll be naively unsure of things that that are going to occur. But we got some news items to talk about and an NXT to review. I'm Robert Duffin. I'm here with Sandra. Sandra, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm excited to talk about NXT this week for sure. I thought it was a good episode.
It was a good episode. I really enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to talking about it as well. And I made a bit of a bib there because I can't remember when Kenny and David are starting their Raw reaction. I don't know if that's this
their
week.
Their rundown. We'd hate to do gimmick infringement here on Inside the Ropes.
Oh, they're not allowed to call it that because it's...
Oh, I don't actually know.
It's moved from Spike to Destination America.
I just know on the roundtable I mocked Kenny because he's calling another thing a rundown. Because, of course, he is.
That's his thing.
He loves to run things down. Which always sounds so negative to me, right? Like, I'm running down this, da-da-da.
I suppose it can. So we're going to do our NXT review as part of this episode. But we're also going to talk about some news, things that's been happening over the last couple of days in the world of pro wrestling. One of the first things that I saw this morning, like when I got up, this has been shared a lot on social media, was the announcement from 2K Sports, the video game company, that they had announced Brock Lesnar as the WWE 2K17 cover star this year, which is unusual because the last couple of years they've actually made this announcement on Raw, or they tried to work it into a sort of story or a segment. But they've obviously decided to do it because obviously Lesnar's not going to be on Raw, so they have to do it as a sort of big media blitz, which is what it was. So finally, the unbeatable incumbent mayor of Suplex City, as they are calling him, will be part of the 2K17's worldwide marketing campaign, which ties in a little bit to the Goldberg announcement, because there was a lot of fuss about the fact that when Goldberg broke out of his compound in the advert to announce him as a downloadable character, or a character if you pre-order it even, there was a reflection when he was in his car, the car window of Suplex City, which makes sense because he'd be heading to Suplex City, because Suplex City is going to be the centerpiece of the marketing for the game. So Brock Lesnar on the cover. It's kind of funny actually that they've taken this long to put him on the cover of the game, because he's been back now since 2012 and he is probably one of their most marketable stars. And in fact, you might find that some people that don't necessarily follow WWE or buy the 2K WWE titles, they might, you know, pick this up because he's on the front of it, and he's a cross-branded star, right?
He is a cross-branded star. I mean, he's a UFC fighter, he's a WWE wrestler, he farms in Canada.
He's great for him. Big in the farming. If you're there to buy like theme farm or something, and then you see renowned former WWE World Heavyweight Champion, former UFC Heavyweight Champion, former NCAA Division One Heavyweight Wrestling Champion / Canadian farm boy, then maybe
wouldn't it be great if WWE 2K17 had this like crossover with Sim Farm or something, and you could have this extra part where you go farm with Brock Lesnar?
He was a downloadable character for the Sim Farm game.
I think that would be great. I don't play video games at all. Like, my video game knowledge ends with like 1992 or something like that. Like, Super Mario Brothers is totally my game, even though I've never beaten it. But yeah, so all of this video game chat and whatnot, I'm very on the periphery of it. But I think it's, I'm pleased that there is a current superstar on the cover of the game this year.
Oh yeah, because yeah, they have been quite bad for suckering everybody in with the likes of Stone Cold Steve Austin, etc.
Yeah, etc.
So, and it makes sense. You know, it makes sense to have him on it. But what I think is quite interesting, I still can't get over this idea of farming with Brock Lesnar.
I think that would be so great. Like, because SimCity and Sim Farm and all of those, like, those are games that I can do.
Yeah. Like, remember when you're playing SimCity and you could select, like, a bad weather formation to come and devastate your city?
Yeah, the tornadoes and stuff.
Yeah, well, but if you could, like, select
if you did the
Brock
cheat
Lesnar.
Code to get too much money, you know, like, then it would send hellfire upon you because you did the capital letter fund too much. And I don't know. I was really into SimCity as a kid. Also SimTower. But yeah, I think that would be great. I think that'd be great if you could do, like, a tornado and then, you know, Brock Lesnar would be like, I will F5 you, tornado.
Extreme farming with
yes!
But one of the reasons I brought this up, obviously, is not just for promotional purposes. Why would not, like, we're getting paid to advertise 2K's press release. But Paul Heyman, the Advocate, who obviously is coming to the UK in July with Inside the Ropes to do his an evening with speaking tour. Details and tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk. He was doing some press related to this, obviously. He's the Advocate, so of course he'd be doing some press. And they asked him some questions about various things, including NXT, the Cruiserweight Classic, all the kind of current things. And one of the things that stuck out was that he was asked about Dean Ambrose and what he thought about Dean Ambrose becoming the WWE World Heavyweight Champion at Money in the Bank. And as perfect as his answers always are, Paul Heyman said that he was delighted that Dean Ambrose was the World Heavyweight Champion because in his mind, Dean Ambrose is a man that Brock Lesnar can defeat easily to become, once again, the WWE Champion. And he suggested that once Lesnar was finished with other commitments, i.e. UFC 200, that when he returned to WWE, his eyes would be firmly set on whoever was carrying that belt, which has led me back to the question of, you know, what's Lesnar going to do? And just this idea, I don't know how you feel about this, but I just cannot get past the idea that Brock Lesnar will be in the SummerSlam main event for the title. That's why the Shield triple threat is happening at Battleground, even though it's a very big anticipated match and it would have made more sense to happen at SummerSlam. And a lot of people predicted it, including our own David McCutcheon. He said that they would do a sort of number one contenders thing or one guy would get his shot at Battleground and then they do the Shield triple threat at SummerSlam. So he's on the front cover of the game. He's going to become their big marketable star. He's in UFC 200. Is there, I mean, what else would there be for Brock Lesnar to do, Sandra, at SummerSlam other than tackle the current WWE World Heavyweight Champion? But of course, the spanner in the works would be is that in my mind, that plan works because I thought that Roman Reigns was going to get his title back at Battleground and Dean Ambrose would be the Mick Foley where he'd have the title for a month. Reigns gets it back and we get Reigns Lesnar 2 at SummerSlam. But obviously, Roman Reigns will be coming back off his 30-day suspension from the wellness policy violation, and they might not be so keen for a guy to come right off his wellness suspension and walk right into a triple threat match and win the world title and then get a headline match with Brock Lesnar, but then you can't really do Dean Ambrose and Brock Lesnar because, well, they did it at WrestleMania and it kind of stunk. So, I don't know, what do you think?
I feel like Brock Lesnar going after the title is the only thing that makes sense. Now, another spanner in the works here is, which title? Will there be two by that point? Because SummerSlam is in August. SummerSlam is August 21. And by then, the brands will have been extended. They will have been split. We will have two distinct, unique rosters.
Distinct, unique.
Distinct, unique rosters. Does that mean that there will be two titles by then? We don't know. You know, all of the reports and things say that there will probably be two titles. Like, that's kind of where all of the conversations seem to be heading. But they haven't really given us any answers. I'm really curious for Raw tonight. Like, I feel like maybe some stuff is going to be answered on Raw tonight as far as the way the triple threat is going to shape up. Because, I mean, they're doing the triple threat, obviously, but it was very curious to me that they didn't really mention Roman Reigns on SmackDown all that much, or they didn't mention his absence, I will say, because they had Seth Rollins come out and do an open challenge and whatnot, and it ended up being Seth Rollins versus Sami Zayn. So, like, SmackDown this week, you guys, pretty good, worth watching. I recommend it. But the lack of mentioning that Roman Reigns just isn't there was kind of telling to me, because they had Dean Ambrose come and interact with Seth Rollins, and it just kind of feels like Seth versus Dean. So Roman's just going to come back just like he did, you know, in the Royal Rumble when he was just out for most of the Royal Rumble, right? And then he just comes back for it. Like, I just, this whole thing with Roman Reigns, it just kind of feels like he's going to just kind of waltz back in, and I don't know if they're going to give him the title or not. Like, they might be pigheaded enough to do it.
Even though it would obviously severely, well, I was going to say severely damage or further damage Roman Reigns in the eyes of many fans.
I feel like the backlash would be really intense, but it seems like they're really not as concerned with the backlash as maybe we think they should be. I mean, I think it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. I'm very curious to see how it plays out. But, I mean, as far as Brock Lesnar, I don't see where else he can go except for a main belt, because, I mean, it's not like he has anyone on the roster that he has a major grudge match or feud or whatever with. Like, the closest would maybe be Roman Reigns or maybe be Seth Rollins, but those are two guys that are involved in the title scene to begin with.
He does sort of have, I mean, I hate to say it because you know how I feel so strongly against this. But he does kind of have some unfinished business with Bray Wyatt.
He does, that's true.
Because they had their quote-unquote match at Roadblock that didn't actually happen.
Right.
And
that's a, yeah.
There was always a kind of, oh, maybe they're going to bring that back at a certain time. But again, I mean, no offense to Bray, who, you know, had one great night and then they just made him look like a bit of a chump last week. He's not really what I imagine, you know, UFC 200 star Brock Lesnar returning to WWE to do. Regardless, I know some people are still really hung up on whether he wins or loses at UFC and how much of an impact it's going to have.
I don't think that's going to matter that much.
I don't think so either. But I think there's ways to spin it again. I mean, it's just, it's not the same. Losing a shoot fight, the UFC is not the same as a loss in pro wrestling. I don't think they're the same thing, but it's gonna be interesting to see what they do. It will be interesting to see what they do. But speaking of the brand split, there was obviously some conversations last week on our shows about the additional pay per views and what that might mean, and having two specials a month, one for Raw and one for SmackDown, which obviously chills my blood. But there was a Ticketmaster update that's led to a lot of speculation with regards to the return of Clash of the Champions, which would be for the Raw brand, because Ticketmaster is now advertising that the September 25th WWE pay-per-view from Indianapolis, they're advertising that as Clash of the Champions, not Night of Champions. There's also been chat about the return of names such as Backlash, which is obviously the traditional post-WrestleMania pay-per-view until a number of years ago, and No Mercy, which has been around since, I think that was actually a UK pay-per-view title first, and then they adopted it in 1999 as a WWE show. These are all really coming along because of this leaked, I say leaked in inverted commas, list of pay-per-views for the brand extension. That was on Reddit, which means, you know, could be a lot of shit. But obviously, Clash of the Champions is certainly going to be the title of the September show, which is likely to be a Raw brand show. But the reason I want to bring it up is because I saw a lot of people get quite excited about Clash of the Champions coming back. And I kind of did a little when I saw it, because I don't really think the title of the show really matters. Like, that just kind of feels like, you know how that there's lots of chat about remakes of movies or reboots or reimaginings or whatever, you know, just had Independence Day Resurgence come out, and Ghostbusters is finally going to come out in the summer and put to rest all of this online flame war regarding that particular elephant in the room.
Right.
And the thing that kind of makes me laugh is that, you know, I think a lot of people would bemoan film studios for thinking that they can just take a title and say, we're making a film. So, for example, if they decided, I mean, again, talk about blood chilling, but if they were like, oh, we're going to make another Back to the Future film.
Oh, gosh.
I know. But in their minds, like, all they really care about is the franchise name and the fact that if they call something Back to the Future, it has, you know, a nostalgic, inbuilt, inherent audience that are going to come to it regardless. Even if they think they're going to hate it, they're probably still going to pay to see it.
And it would probably turn out to be more like Home Alone 3 than anything else.
Yeah, maybe. But I think when it comes to other things, well, I think film's the only one you can really make the comparison to, is that we're a little bit more about it when they're like, oh, really? They're bringing back Independence Day? And they're just, okay, so they're just trying to tap into our nostalgia for 20 years ago. But I think with wrestling, like, people have, on the whole, kind of just gone, woo, when they saw the Clash of the Champions logo. And I'm just kind of like, does it really matter what they call these shows? Because they could call it whatever, you know, Bumfuck Mania. I don't care. Like, call it whatever. It doesn't really matter what they call the shows. It just,
at least that one would make headlines.
Well, that's true. That would make headlines. But, you know, it's just going to come down to whether it's any good. You know, people get very hung up on show names, and I've never really been that bothered about what they call the shows, and you know, unless they called it something completely ridiculous, then you'd maybe like, oh, for God's sake. But the
capital punishment,
yeah, capital punishment. Oh, but on the whole, I'm just kind of like, well, it's really the content that matters. It doesn't really matter what you call it. And for everyone getting really excited about Clash of the Champions, I'm kind of like, but like, all they're really getting excited about is the fact that they remember that was a thing and that they remember the name. But ultimately, does it really matter? I don't know what you think.
I've never really understood the tie to pay-per-view names, and that could be because of when I started watching wrestling, right? Because in 2010, when I started watching wrestling, it seems like all of the ones that aren't gimmick match central, they kind of blend together. Not that there aren't some really great ones and some really poor ones, but, I mean, if you were to tell me, like, oh, how are your feelings toward Battleground versus Fastlane versus Payback versus Backlash, like,
it's just a name.
They're kind of all the same thing. Like, I'll remember really, really great pay-per-views. Like, Payback from this year, I thought it was great, but I don't remember it because it was Payback. It's just like, they have to call it something, right? It's like all of the takeovers are called Takeover something. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of tied to the Takeover name, because with the exception of Arrival, every single NXT pay-per-view or network special or whatever has been called Takeover. So if they were to switch that, that would feel remarkable just because it would be different. But, like, even me, and I'm Little Miss, like, I remember a lot about NXT. And sometimes I have to be like, was that at Takeover Rival, or was that at Takeover, you know, our Evolution, or was it at da-da-da-da? Because the names don't necessarily mean as much as the matches and the moments to me.
That's, yeah, because the thing with Clash of the Champions is it has a lot of,
like, was that a particular style of pay-per-view? Because Night of Champions is like all the champions defend, even though that happens.
Well, I'll tell you, I think explaining to you what Clash of the Champions was will probably make you kind of go, oh, well, yeah, that's very specific to its time. So in the late 1980s, obviously, there was a lot of tensions between Vince McMahon and Jim Crockett over at the NWA. And Starrcade was obviously their WrestleMania. And mm-hmm. I'm sure it was Starrcade 87. That's the year that WWF started Survivor Series. And they put Survivor Series on the same night as Starrcade, you know, just to fuck with them.
Was it on Thanksgiving?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Okay.
And at that point, you know, pay-per-view was really in its infancy, and a lot of the cable companies if I remember correctly, the cable companies couldn't carry more than one pay-per-view a night. So WWF said, because obviously Vince was very ruthless back then, he said that if you carry Starrcade over Survivor Series, you will not be given the chance to carry any future WWF shows.
Ooh, that's a dick move.
Yeah, talk about.
I mean, it's smart, but that's a dick move.
So, and I think there was a lot of, you know, aggression on WWF's side, and the pay-per-view companies were a bit like, oh, we'd really rather not be put in this position. And then it happened again. I think it was January. I think it was just after, like January 88, the NWA had a Bunkhouse Stampede show, and WWF aired the first ever Royal Rumble that night, which was actually for free. They didn't do the pay-per-view thing because they didn't want to get... Like, I think the pay-per-view companies are a bit like, stop dicking us around here, like, this is not fair. So WWF put the Royal Rumble for free on USA the night of Bunkhouse Stampede on pay-per-view. And then, finally, you know...
WCW didn't start the war.
It doesn't really seem like,
right?
Does it?
Like... I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Just as a new fan who doesn't necessarily know all of this, like, because I know some of the history and whatnot, but this makes it seem like something was going on beforehand.
So what they decided to do, Jim Crockett decided, like, you know, fuck you, Vince. Let's get one back on you. So the night of WrestleMania 4, they aired the first ever Clash of the Champions for free on TBS. And that show is famous for the 45-minute draw between Ric Flair and Sting for the world title, which is kind of credited with making Sting, you know, the star that he is, or was then and is today. And they did the same thing. I think they put another Clash of the Champions on to coincide with WrestleMania 5. And then they started doing these Clash of the Champions events a couple of times in the same way that WWF did Saturday Night's Main Event. For free on TV, so they would have like super cards with quite big matches on them, but not like the biggest matches possible. And WCW ran the Clash of the Champion events right through to, I think it was 97. And there's like a Blu-ray, like a pretty good Blu-ray with like a best of Clash of the Champions, and that's probably on the network now. Actually, I sound very old fashioned by referring to the fact that it's a physical media release. So, you know, I get that, you know, you can imagine now there's a lot of sort of, oh, remember when, you know, they were airing Clash of the Champions opposite WrestleMania, and then Clash of the Champions was this great, you know, supercard show that was aired on TV that we didn't have to pay for, you know, and sometimes it had really big matches on it. So there is a lot of nostalgia for it, but just because you call at the September WWE pay-per-view Clash of the Champions, you know, I think they're going to have to do a lot more than just use that name. I get that people are excited. Oh, wow, it's called Clash of the Champions. But what are they going to do? You know, I think it really needs to have more of the spirit of those shows than just calling it something. Does that make sense?
It seems like the names never, like, I mean, like I said before, the names have never mattered that much to me at all because they all look the same anyway. You know, except for, I mean, if it's Money in the Bank, then you know that there's going to be a Money in the Bank ladder match. So that's different and that sets it apart. Or if it's Hell in a Cell, you know that, you know, happy October, you get Hell in a Cell matches. But, you know, something like Clash of the Champions or, I mean, even Night of Champions, which seems like is a more specific concept than what Clash of the Champions is, because it doesn't sound like, from everything you're telling me, it doesn't sound like it was a very specific thing other than
no, it didn't have
was aired opposite WrestleMania, which clearly isn't going to be the case now.
But I have something that I think that, because I think to really make it mean something and to give people who are excited, I mean, the thing is, I'm not saying like, oh, you're an idiot if you're just nostalgically excited about something, because I get nostalgically excited about stuff as well.
Oh, I get ridiculously excited about things.
You know, even if I've been burned in the past, I'll still be like, oh, okay. So I'd like to, like, I would say that the most famous, or two of the most famous things that happened, like I said to you, there was the Ric Flair Sting a 45-minute draw, which made Sting a star. And he was obviously nowhere near the caliber of Ric Flair in terms of stardom at that point. And then the year after, they did Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair in a 2 out of 3 falls match, which is like, you know, goes to, I mean, those two guys had incredible matches with each other, and it's considered one of the best. So you've got to know what kind of caliber that is. And I just got to think, you know what? You know, pencil in for whatever you're doing that night at the Clash of the Champions. You know, don't do a direct homage, but maybe the night of Clash of the Champions, pick a guy like a Sami Zayn who is definitely not on the level of whoever your champ is. You know, whether it's like Roman or whoever.
Yeah.
Or one of the Shield guys, or even Lesnar. And do one of those things. Like, make if Clash of the Champions is known for anything, maybe it's either having, you know, a guaranteed match of the year in its main event, do the two out of three falls thing again, or let two guys go like Broadway, you know, have a proper like 45 minute barnstormer match where a guy who really needs a bump is given one. You know, I'd love to see.
In this era, you'd almost have to call it an Iron Man match, though, wouldn't you? Because you can't just, like, say, oh, this match has a time limit.
No, yeah.
No other matches have a time limit, but this one does, but it won't matter.
Yeah, it would just be in terms of the booking or whatever. Like, just let them go long, let them have, like, this great match, boost somebody. Yeah. I don't know, I'm just trying to think of ways. I mean, it's all very well and good, you know, bringing back names of shows, but I think that once you get past the sort of... Because, you know, chances are they're not going to do sets like they used to have the pay-per-view sets to you know, they bring back Backlash. I don't know if you even know this, but Backlash used to have these sort of swinging, I don't even know how to describe them. You'd have to Google it to, it had quite an elaborate entranceway, but it had these kind of swinging scythes almost, which was quite fun and all that. And that's kind of what people associate with it. So, and like you were talking about before we went on the air, you know, they brought back King of the Ring last year for the network and it just looked like Raw. And it wasn't really that special. You know, everybody got quite buzzed about it. Oh, they're bringing back King of the Ring. And then it just looked like the most generic.
No, it could have easily taken place on Raw.
Yeah, it didn't look very interesting. So,
but didn't they, a couple years ago, wasn't there a budget cutting sort of thing where they said that we're not doing unique colored ropes anymore? Like, they use white ropes now because, like, carrying both red and blue ropes was more weight on the truck or something, and they were like cutting costs wherever they could.
Yeah, so, but I think
that's another thing with the Raw and SmackDown exclusive
pay-per-views.
I know. Like, I agree that the sets would make a big difference. Like, I would love for the sets to look different for pay-per-views than they do for just regular shows. I mean, NXT is in a, you know, comfortable position where they're in Florida, so they don't have to transport a whole bunch of stuff, right? Like, they make takeovers look different sometimes, and it's cool because it's like, oh yeah, this feels like a different show. This feels big. This feels live. This feels important. And, you know, stuff like having Raw and SmackDown look different, maybe something with the brand extension now that they're not going to be touring together, maybe there will be some distinction again, but I kind of doubt that they're going to do elaborate pay-per-view sets other than, you know, for WrestleMania. And did they even do much for SummerSlam last year?
Not that I remember. But I just think that it's sort of the final thing I was going to say, and it was that, you know, it's cool that people are excited about it, but you know what? People are not going to be excited about Clash of the Champions next year if you bring back a name and there is nothing of the spirit of what people remember about it there on the night. And I think the spirit of Clash of the Champions is slightly rebellious. It's maybe where you get to see someone step up to the plate for the first time, or it's maybe where you get to see a guaranteed, you know, match of the year contender or something really, really special. And I think that a lot of people will tune in because it's called Clash of the Champions, but if you just give them your bog standard product without much variation or without much, or you don't try to create a moment, then, you know, when they do Clash of the Champions 2017, it'll just be another show. And I think they got the chance to do something quite special with these, if they move to having two pay-per-views a month, they need to do something with them so that they don't all just feel like an assembly line product, which is what I fear it's going to feel like when we get even more hours of WWE TV every month once the brand split happens.
I fear the same thing, and I think it's going to be down to storytelling. It's going to be down to booking, and you know, I've been enjoying WWE since WrestleMania. I've really actually been enjoying them. So, I mean, I've liked Raw. There have been a couple bad Raws, and it seems to be whenever American sports things are taking place. Which, I mean, the only reason I know anything about all of these basketball finals are because they're fucking with Raw, right? So, like, maybe I'm a bad American. I don't know. I don't care. But I think that they have a chance. If they can make things feel distinct and if they can make them feel important, then that's awesome. I do kind of worry about this, like, just glut of content.
And I think what's interesting is that...
down.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is that the... the general vibe from fans and from our listeners seems to be is like we kind of want this brand split to be good. I think.
Yeah.
People want it to be good, but we've just got some stuff that we'd like to see happen, or little touches that make it feel a bit more special. But
when I feel like there's so much that's still uncertain too. Like, we can speculate all we want, right? And boy, do I love speculating about what's going to happen. But until we see it, I think I'm in a positive enough place with WWE right now, which would not have been the case pre-WrestleMania. So thank you, WWE, for putting on good programming and making me feel a little more positive about this, right? But I'm in a good enough place with WWE right now that they've been actually telling stories and they've been pretty compelling. Like, I definitely have some issues with stuff that they've been doing, but I trust that it could be good. And I just really, really hope that it is.
Agreed. So anyway, we talked a little bit longer than expected there, but it's always good to have a blabber. It's been a while since we've had a chat. But it's Monday, so that means it's time for Sondra to guide us through this past week's episode of NXT. So we're going to be back right after this to do just that.
And we're back here on Inside the Ropes. Time to talk about NXT. I thought this was a great episode. I enjoyed it pretty much start to finish. There's a lot to say. So, I mean, the recap of Finn Balor and Shinsuke Nakamura from the previous week was pretty cool. I'm really excited about that match. And if anybody spoils the outcome of that match for me, because I know that it's taped already, like, I will make threats to murder you and then do nothing about it. But just... I'm so excited to see that match. And I'm actually, I don't know, Robert, have we talked about this? Like, I don't know how you feel about that happening just on an episode of NXT. I kind of love it because it makes the episode of NXT that happens on, that's going to feel big. Like, that's going to feel Sami Zayn, Antonio Cesaro 2 out of 3 falls match big. And I know you haven't seen that match, which is like a crime against wrestling.
I know.
But
it's not on the network.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yeah, there was a recap episode in December. I'll send it to you.
Oh, I thought it wasn't on the network because it happened pre-network NXT era.
It did happen pre... Well, I'm fairly sure that there's a recap episode where it might be shown, but I could be wrong about that. I could be thinking of Hulu. Well, it is, however, on the Blu-ray, for sure. So, yeah, the greatest match is Blu-ray. It's really, really good. But regardless, you're going to watch that match at some point soon.
Yes.
It needs to happen. I will make
maybe,
sure.
Maybe I'll save it and we can watch it when we're hanging out in the UK.
We can watch it when we're hanging out in the UK. I will bring my Blu-ray because seriously, it's so good. But I like when the episodes of NXT feel important, right? Like, that's something that's happened since TakeOver started, since we've had these amazing live specials of NXT, the week-to-week television, and this is reflected in some, you know, comments I get from the fans sometimes, or other NXT fans that I talk to or whatever. Like, sometimes people are like, oh yeah, well, I used to watch it all the time, now it doesn't matter so much, but I definitely watch all the takeovers. Like, for me, I want the TV to matter too. Like, I want all of the episodes of TV to matter and be important, and I know that's probably just ridiculous, but
no, I agree with you.
I like when things... I don't like when it feels like I'm just watching something out of habit. I like that when I'm enjoying the entertainment that I choose to consume and that I spend hours and hours of my week, you know, devoting my life to this thing, right? Like, I love pro wrestling. I want it to matter when I watch it. And someone who matters to me a whole lot whenever I watch him is Ty Dillinger. And we got the perfect 10 Ty Dillinger versus Oney Lorcan, formerly known as Christopher Gerard, formerly known as Biff Busiek. He's a weird looking dude. And
he
I kind of like
weird
it. Like, I'm not that familiar with his work. Were you familiar with his work pre-NXT?
No, before he got that absolutely horrendous name. I do not know. Oney.
Oney.
Oney. It sounds like Oney a noise. Oney Lorcan.
He just sounds like he belongs in Star Trek. Like, I'm probably just thinking Vulcan, Lorcan, but I don't know.
Maybe.
He does look a little like an alien.
Yeah, and I think, didn't they call him, like, Gollum on commentary?
Mm-hmm.
I feel that was a bit cruel.
Yeah, they did.
What I was going to say was, well, first of all, what you were saying about the Nakamura Finzi match. What I like about that happening on the episode is that I like that for the same reason that I liked Samoa Joe winning the title in a house show.
Yeah.
And that the problem with NXT is that for a while there, it got so easy to strategize when things were going to happen that it did become very easy to not watch the TV because, you know, there's only how many takeovers a year? Five? Four?
It was four. It seems like they keep sneaking more in lately. So, yeah, somewhere like four or five.
Four or five. And it became like, you know, when someone won at one takeover, you could kind of predict, you know, when they might lose and things like that. And I think one of the things that hurt NXT a little bit was the predictability of the title changes.
Mm-hmm.
Because he sort of knew when they were going to happen and because of the main roster stuff and blah, 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 blah. And I sort of hope that they knew that the kind of the rut of the TV building up to Dallas and then the wake of Dallas makes them feel like they have to do things. I also think this match might be happening on an episode just because I think, you know, Balor might be coming up for the brand split, which is fine. But
and I think they want to do Joe Nakamura in Brooklyn.
But I think, you know, if we had to wait until Brooklyn for Nakamura Finn, and then you wouldn't get Nakamura Joe until December and all this kind of stuff. And I kind of want these matches to happen a little bit quicker, mostly because I kind of want all these guys up boosting SmackDown, which, you know, by process of elimination, I'm increasingly realizing might be the show that I have to review every week. you know, because Raw is being reacted to by two other people. So I guess the SmackDown... Shake
well, think about down. It. Get the two-hour show versus the three-hour show.
It's definitely a winner. I just hope it becomes a valuable two-hour show. And not
back in 2012, you were campaigning to review SmackDown, I'll have you know.
I know, but it was a little bit better then, and Daniel Bryan was the champion.
I know.
Anyway.
Maybe it'll be good again.
I'm better bloody be good again. Raw's been cruelly taken away from us. I say cruelly,
I know, right?
With my tongue firmly planted in
cheek. I know.
But... I'm glad this match is happening. And Ty Dillinger, I love him. And also what I really love is that I kind of feel like they're telling a story.
It feels like a story, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I love this. This whole episode felt like it was telling stories to me. And it just makes me so happy because it was very like, Ty Dillinger's coming off a couple losses. How is Ty Dillinger going to feel about that? Probably not great. Oh, wait, upset win from Oney Lorcan, who... just recently got a name. Like, he's not a thing in NXT yet, you know? Like, I mean, he has a very accomplished indie career, but what they're doing with Oney Lorcan, which I also appreciate, is it's like, he has an established indie career, but we're not just putting him out in front of you and saying, no, seriously, he is great, you love him, we promise. They're making it into a thing. He got a surprise win over Ty Dillinger. That does something for Oney Lorcan, right? Ty Dillinger's reacting to this loss. I mean, he looked like he was going to cry going up the ramp after that match, and I wanted to cry for him and hug him and say, it's going to be okay, Ty.
Yeah, but I liked it. You know, he was hitting some big moves and not getting what he wanted, and he seemed exasperated.
Yeah.
And then he let his guard down a little bit. He hit a... Oh, you're better remembering the sequence of things than I am, but did he not get, like, a really near fall? And he was like, what? And then he took him into the corner.
The super kick?
Yeah, the super kick. That's what it was.
The
it
was super
that
kick was
brilliant
great.
Super kick.
And I'm not a super kick fan necessarily because I don't know, I see a lot of them. Like, yeah, I wasn't around for Shawn Michaels and Sweet Chin Music and blah, 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 or whatever. But, like, this one was very.
Well, I thought
great.
It was over. And the thing was, I don't really read the NXT spoilers. So when he hit the kick, I was like, oh, he's got his big win. And then when he didn't get it, I just went, oh my God, I think he's going to lose this.
I was on the emotional journey right with Ty Dillinger.
Yeah, and then he took him into the corner for the 10 punches, and then he stalls or something happens.
He hesitates. He does one, two, I think he does three, and then he kind of looks at his hand and he looks unsure or something, and he gets down, and then that allows Oney Lorcan to hit that weird spinning neck breaker thing eventually.
Which looks very vicious.
It does look very vicious. I liked Oney Lorcan a lot in this match too.
Yeah,
I mean,
me too.
Ty Dillinger is my guy, but... like, if I had to pick between Oney Lorcan and Andrade Cien Almas right now?
Yeah.
Kind of more into Oney Lorcan?
Definitely. Team Lorcan all the way.
Team Lorcan. Lorcan.
Get that,
I just
Lorcan.
Thought,
get
that's
that
even just
pretty
weird to
boy
say.
Andre La Bamba off my TV. no, I'm kidding. No, I don't hate him or anything. But, I thought this was a really great opening match. I really enjoyed it.
And I feel like they are going somewhere with it.
I feel like
how Dillinger reacting to it is going to be important. And I can't wait to see what they do. I think someone, and I apologize for not being able to credit you, but someone said, I feel like they're going for like a baby face push for Ty Dillinger with the story and everything. And I feel like that's probably where it's going. And I'm excited to see it. I'm excited for Ty Dillinger, guy who matters. I'm excited for Ty Dillinger's emotional journey. I'm right there with him.
My only fear after the last takeover was that they knew they had someone popular on their hands, but they weren't really that interested in doing something with him. But I think everything since this pay-per-view has shown that they, you know, yeah, it might be a losing streak, which, you know, traditionally they kind of suck at doing, but it's something. He's got something, which I appreciate.
Yeah, and I will say they do them better in NXT than they do on the main roster, just because they have a little bit more leeway.
Isn't that just a general rule?
Yes. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily fair to be like, oh, the main roster's shite and NXT is great, but it's kind of a truth. And also, they have more ability to finesse things, right, with the taping schedules, with it only being an hour long.
Yes.
They have a little bit more authority to command storylines and whatnot and kind of shape them and make them great. And I'm excited that we're getting stories. And then another story that's happening on this episode of NXT, we see Andrea DeMarco with Austin Aries asking him about losing again. So we have another losing streak angle. And Austin Aries is like, my goal is the same. I want to be NXT champion. I am the greatest man who ever lived, which, okay. Which is kind of funny. Mr. Sandro was watching NXT with me today, and he's like, the greatest man who ever lived seems a bit of an overstatement, right? Like, he's like, are you comparing yourself to, like, Jesus Christ, who became, you know, one of the most known men in history or whatever, but you're Austin Aries, and at his age, like, when Jesus died or whatever, like, at his age, you were in TNA?
Mm.
He was like, I guess it's kind of like coming back from the dead, but whatever. But Austin Aries is talking to Andrea DeMarco, and No Way Jose interrupts this interview. Not what I expected. Not what I expected at all.
No.
Didn't know that I needed this in my life.
But I did like it.
Needed this in my life. I love it. You know, Aries is, he's having kind of some problems in NXT right now, and his matches have been good, but No Way Jose is basically like, you know, when life tells you no, you should say no way. And Austin Aries is left looking a bit bewildered. Just kind of like, what just happened? Not super sure. And yeah, they showed a little bit of a recap of Bayley in her match against Nia Jax. They say Bayley's going to be back tonight.
Oh,
and then
I laughed. I mean, I feel bad because you know how much I love Bayley and how
she
loved Bayley. But I don't know why, but her announcement that she was coming back outside Full Sail was just really, like, awkward. Or like the camera, like, was up at the Full Sail sign, and it pans down, and she's like standing there in her gear, and she's like, "Gee golly whiskers! Like, I'm so excited! I'm so excited! Mr. Regal said I'm going to fight tonight!" And then she turns around, and the camera just spends an awful long time just watching her march back into Full Sail in her outfit.
It kind of did.
And I was like, oh, like, I think they needed to cut it early, because the longer you watch her wandering in her gear, you're like, this kind of looks stupid.
I was kind of expecting her to, like, skip and dance or something. I don't know. Like, it was just,
maybe.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. But we got No Way Jose versus Josh Woods, which, the match. Yeah.
He did not have an Oney Larkin-esque NXT success story this episode, did he?
No, he did not. He did not.
Although I will say, one of the things is I always found, like, No Way Jose, he's fun and engaging. I just do like the gimmick. It just makes me laugh. So that's great. But I always thought he was a little bit ropey in the ring. Like, some of his moves and it was a wee bit kind of, oh, you're not that great. But I actually thought he looked much better this episode. So he's obviously improving, which is good.
I think he looks improved every time we see him, which is good. Like, and that's something about NXT being developmental, right? Like, sometimes you see people and they wrestle and it might not look the greatest, but it's kind of like they're not a fully formed product necessarily, because it is NXT. And that's what NXT is supposed to be, is developmental. And that's something that, you know, has always drawn me to it, is seeing the progression and the change and whatnot. And I feel like we're seeing progression with No Way Jose. Because No Way Jose, you know, he wins his match and it's great and there's some dancing and there's not really anything to say about the match, but afterward he's doing his dance and he's celebrating and he's having fun. And, you know, No Way Jose is, he's just really friggin' fun, and I really like it too. But there hasn't been a lot to it other than being really friggin' fun and just, you know, being lovable and great, which, yeah, is enough for a while. But out comes Austin Aries to talk to No Way Jose after the match, which I thought was pretty interesting too, because Aries is responding to No Way Jose coming up after you know him. And immediately in my head, of course, I'm like, oh, well, Austin Aries is going to, you know, attack No Way Jose at some point. But the way they did it was so great. It was so perfect because they drew it out just long enough.
Yeah, it drew out long enough for me to think, oh, he's not going to beat him up.
I thought maybe this is going to happen on another episode. Maybe they'll actually tag together or something before the eventual turn, because it has to lead to an eventual turn.
And I did enjoy Full Sail giving him shit when they were like, Aries sucks.
Oh, like, yeah, oh, they were going, nice. Aries sucks.
It's like, oh, Aries nice sucks. To see you guys too. Ugh.
And I think that actually showed me what a veteran Austin Aries is in dealing with the crowd. He handled it well. You know, a lot of the guys who are new or newer on the scene, they wouldn't be able to just kind of get through it like that. And, you know, Austin Aries has been doing this for a really long time. And this is the most I've ever liked Austin Aries, for sure, is getting involved with freaking No Way Jose, which is not what I expected at
The thing that I
all.
Liked was the attack. The way that he did it was he used his hand, and he kind of enticed Jose to, like, circle. He's spin around. You're dancing with someone, like, hey, you do a wee spin. And No Way's like, okay. And he does a wee spin. And then he does the same thing to Aries. He's like, you spin around. And I just kind of thought, oh, God. Aries spinning around is the setup for that discus forearm that he throws, and he did. And he
see, and I didn't know that he did a discus forearm. I was expecting him to club No Way Jose in the back, like when he spun around. But I mean, the way they did it, I don't know. Did you see the clip of Bobby Roode doing basically the same little gimmick?
Yeah, they did the same thing at Download.
At Download, yeah. Like with him not being able to control his leg and then starting to dance and everything. And because when Austin Aries comes out, he says to No Way Jose, and I think this is important too, he says, you know, you've taught me something too. You know, he was like, what can I learn from No Way Jose? You know, I'm Austin Aries. I've been doing this forever. What can I learn from No Way Jose? But I can learn something. NXT is about having fun. And then he's about to leave, and No Way Jose calls him back into the ring, and that's when they start doing their dancing and everything. And I think what's so effective about this segment for me is that it accomplishes so much in not a whole lot of time, because it manages to make Austin Aries instantly more interesting and a part of NXT by getting involved in a story, like an actual story, not a, you know, this is a dream match from something from the indies, but an actual story with a guy who's very NXT. Like No Way Jose, he did wrestle on some independent, you know, he was on the indie scene for a little while, but not like this, right? Like he's in NXT creation, this character is. And it also manages to call out No Way Jose being like, you know, your whole gimmick is you are fun and that's it. And that's enough for me right now, but it can't be enough forever necessarily. So we're finally getting No Way Jose in a story also where he has to maybe rise above just being fun and maybe find like another gear, if that makes sense. And I'm really excited to see it because it feels like Austin Aries has finally like arrived and is a part of something in NXT, and No Way Jose has also a feud, and I'm just intrigued by the whole thing and I love it.
I wonder if the mimicry of Bobby Roode doing that, and then, well, obviously it either went two ways. They either went, hey, that was pretty cool, let's do it with Aries on TV, or is it showing some kind of link between the two? Are they going to reunite as a team in NXT, which I think I would like a lot of Bobby Roode and Austin Aries together. Maybe not as a tag team, but just as like allies.
An alliance.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun together. So kind of hoping that happens. Kind of hoping we get to see Bobby Roode sometime soon.
I mean, that'd be cool. Like, I'm not really familiar with their work in TNA. So I'm interested to see this Bobby Roode that everybody tells me about that I've only seen in like little clips and segments and whatnot. I can't wait for him to debut. I think that's going to be really cool. So,
I hope so.
I also hope so. And after Austin Aries and No Way Jose and all of that goodness, we see William Regal sitting with Shinsuke Nakamura looking like he's Zach Morris celebrating the 4th of July. Like, what was that shirt?
I've got no idea, but it was very early 90s.
It was very early 90s. And basically, William Regal is responding to the Finn Balor Shinsuke Nakamura segment from the week before and saying that, you know, you want us to make this match, or, you know, you want this match to happen. It's going to happen in 3 weeks. So that's when we find out that Finn Balor Shinsuke Nakamura is going to happen in 3 weeks on NXT TV, not at TakeOver. And then in comes Buddy Murphy, because of course Buddy Murphy comes in, because he's actually started to just be the guy who interrupts William Regal, right? And I'm starting to really be into Buddy Murphy a lot. Like, Wesley Blake was my favorite of Blake and Murphy, but what they're doing with Buddy Murphy just kind of makes me laugh right now, because he demands that William Regal treat him as a top star, because, and he rightly points out that of the three men sitting at that table, he's the only one who's ever held gold in NXT. So he should totally be treated like a top star. And Shinsuke Nakamura, beautiful Shinsuke Nakamura, just responds by, you know, saying that his challenge or his request for a match will be answered by the King of Strong Style, and then shimmies off screen because he's so delightfully weird and I love him.
Yeah,
and we're
going to
get that
mate.
Match later on the episode. He called him mate. Oh, that was beautiful.
Very funny. Very,
because
very funny.
Australia.
And again, I've waxed lyrical enough about him on other podcasts, like the last Faye 5 episode, but I really just think William Regal is untouchable when it comes to delivery, body language, performance. He is the man.
He's absolutely the man. He's my favorite general manager, and that includes Mick Foley. Like, I love William Regal so much, and he just makes sense, and he's not about his own bullshit, which I hate with authority figures. Like, Dario Cueto is kind of a unique example, because he's another character on a show, right?
Yeah, he's a character on a show, but what I like about Regal is that it's not, like, he feels like he's actually managing generally.
Mm-hmm.
NXT. He's not like coming out and cutting 20 minute promos and stuff because he's in charge, or getting himself involved in the storylines directly as the antagonist or protagonist. And
no, he has really no, like, he has no dog in the fight.
Yeah,
really.
I would
just
love
trying to
see,
put on a good show.
I know you hate this, but of all the call ups that they could do, I would quite like to see Regal come up as the GM of SmackDown and have him play the role the exact same way. You know, just have him be backstage, and he comes out to, he's a matchmaker. He comes out to make matches or to broker agreements and deals, and he's there. People can go to him to ask for things. He can go to people to speak to them about their conduct, but he's not like, you know, like the authority in that sense.
I don't want anyone to be like the authority.
No.
I don't want anyone to be like the authority for a very long time. I feel like there are plenty of people who could do that. I want to keep Regal in NXT, selfishly, of course I do.
Yeah.
But and plus, I mean, with the real life backstage behind the scenes roles he has in NXT, NXT is the place for him.
Oh yeah, I suppose.
So
damn it.
So
I guess you have to ask Daniel Bryan then.
Daniel Bryan would be great. Daniel Bryan would be great in that William Regal role on SmackDown. I mean, Daniel Bryan was trained by William Regal. It would make sense.
I know, but it's probably not gonna happen.
I know, probably not, but he's commentating the Cruiserweight Classic.
That's true. I'm very happy about that.
I'm so excited about that, and I haven't had any of that spoiled for me either.
Did you watch the intro video, though? The Facebook Live thing where they introduce all the competitors?
Not yet. I plan to soon.
It's not very exciting. Like, they literally, I mean, it's kind of annoying that they are like these sort of, how many of them are there again?
32,
right. There's a lot of 32 unique people. And they put them all in the same t-shirt, like the same CWC t-shirt. And then there's this really awkward thing where it's kind of weird. Like, they basically, they're all outside the ring, and they get announced into the ring with, like, generic music playing. So, like, they get into the ring, they walk to the middle, they do their pose like they're a diva entrance from, like, 2011.
Oh, gosh.
They do their pose, and then they sort of pause for an uncomfortable amount of time. And then they leave the ring. So they're obviously getting, like, photographs taken or whatever. But it's a little bit strange.
Right.
It's kind of like, oh, why am I watching this for 13 minutes? It's not really that interesting. But
like, it's a pageant?
It was like it was a pageant. It was exactly like that. But obviously I was hanging off to see, you know, quote-unquote, my guys. Like, Noam
Dar. I'm so excited to see Noam Dar in a WWE ring. Like,
yeah, or Zack
Sabre
Jr. or Kota Ibushi. So, yeah, I was excited to see those guys. And I would say that Zack Sabre Jr. and Kota Ibushi, they got the biggest reactions. So
who are you behind in the Cruiserweight Classic? I know this is a tangent, but if you had to be behind one guy or two, because I'm probably going to say two.
I don't know anything. I don't know any spoilers. I've not seen anything. I just can't believe that it's not going to be an Ibushi Sabre Jr. final. Like, I just feel it, like, because they're the two biggest names, I think.
Yeah.
That, like, how can it not be that? ultimately, like, I just feel like that's the most mileage you can get, because those two guys feel like the two guys that they're going to try and sign. But I don't, yeah, no, it makes me such like a shameless hometown or, well, home country fanboy, but I really hope Noam Dar like goes really, really far, just because I've like, I love him. He's awesome.
He is awesome. He is so great.
He's a cool guy. And I've like literally watched him wrestle since he was a child. You know, like the first time I saw him wrestle, I think he was like 16 or 17.
Wow.
So, and that was like 5-6 years ago. So he's still a baby. But
he is.
I hope he's in it. I hope he doesn't get put out early. I hope he's in it for a while. In my heart of hearts, I don't think he's going to be in the final. Like, I think it's probably going to be Ibushi and Sabre Jr. But I'm looking forward to watching it. I think it's going to be...
I did see rumors of him potentially working towards signing with them.
Yeah.
Which I think would be pretty exciting, because then Nikki Storm and Noam Dar would both be in NXT.
Yeah, exactly.
And hey, I'm just geeking out about Scottish wrestling right now.
Is anybody running down the CWC yet?
Is
anyone reacting to the Cruiserweight
Classic? You know, I'm going to call it, frankly, because I feel like I should be able to do that, because it's kind of an NXT situation.
Yeah, well, it sort of is. It's happening at Full Sail.
It is happening at Full Sail. And it involves NXT superstars Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, Rich Swann.
Yeah. It's a phrase that's becoming increasingly popular over the past few weeks for reasons I cannot fathom. But it's definitely in your wheelhouse.
I would say so. I would say that it is. So, I don't know. I cannot wait for the Cruiserweight Classic. That's actually... doesn't it start to air on July 13?
Yeah, it's not far. Not far.
And maybe we can watch the first bit
of
it.
Oh, shit! Of course. Yeah.
When I'm over there in the UK with you guys. We do have a day off on the 14th.
Very
just
true.
Saying. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm getting pretty giddy about this whole thing. And also, I love Drew Gulak. I'm really excited about Drew Gulak also. Because I've been watching him in Chikara a lot lately. And, it's pretty exciting. But, where were we? Gosh. Oh, Bayley versus Deonna Purrazzo. We were about to get to Bayley versus Deonna Purrazzo. So Bayley's back after she finally made it into Full Sail, after jogging into the building for a while. And she fights Deonna Purrazzo. I thought it was a fun little match.
I will say it
feels like Bayley's been kind of stuck in limbo. And that's something I've been saying for the past couple weeks. Like, it just kind of feels like they're not sure what to do with her. Or, you know, it feels like she's on the precipice of being called up.
Yeah.
And that's a rumor that I've read, too, is that they're planning on calling up a whole bunch of people with the brand split. And Bayley's going to be one of them. And, I mean, as much as it terrifies me for Bayley to be brought up, it's probably time.
Yeah, because, I would say so.
You know, like, she's above the rest of the division. She almost feels like an outlier. It's starting to feel like when Charlotte hung around for so long, except for that Bayley's just such a special character, and I'm so terrified. But, I mean, what they're doing with her right now is basically she's like the elder statesman of NXT women's division, right? Yeah. It was so good to see her back, though. Like, I teared up a little bit seeing her back, because I realized how long it's been since I've seen the wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube men entrance. And it was just really great. And I thought it was a nice little match.
Yeah, nice little way to bring her back in.
Yeah. And, you know, Deonna Purrazzo, I think she's in talks of maybe being signed also. And I like her. I like her fine. I'd be interested. She can't talk worth anything, but, you know, they have promo classes for that, so that's good. And then in continuing my women's wrestling feelings for this episode, because I had a lot of feelings about women's wrestling in this episode, we had Carmella backstage talking to Andrea DeMarco, and she wants to still be NXT Women's Champion. You know, she basically says that. Alexa Bliss comes in to interrupt and be like, no, I'm going to be NXT Women's Champion. They have a little fight about their boys. Alexa tells Carmella that without Enzo and Cass, nobody knows who she is. And Carmella says, you know, my boys are off doing great things and your boys are doing, nothing. Which is true. And Alexa's like, wait, I left them because I was the star of the group and blah, blah, blah. And they're having a little interaction. They're going to have a match next week. And something that hit me. And then after that, it's followed up by an Asuka and Nia Jax kind of video package, like recapping their whole title match and feud and all of that kind of stuff. And then Nia Jax versus Liv Morgan. And in all of this, just, Robert, look at all of these women with individual characteristics.
I know.
Skill sets, motivations, personalities, they're all individuals and they're all fully formed humans. And that's something that's become standard fare in NXT, but it's not something I want to take for granted because like on the main roster, we've been having some progress. We had some setbacks, like
the main roster's
still a little ropey with that. Right. And I just, I need to mention it and I need to point out how important it is to me that on this episode of NXT, we saw, I mean, how many different women? We saw like nine, and we saw a whole bunch of women. I'm not even going to count because there were a whole bunch of them. Six? Yeah.
At least?
In an hour. In 1 hour. And, you know, more, I think, if you count video package representation and whatnot. So that's just really important to me, and it's something I don't want to take for granted. And it's something that makes me very grateful to NXT as a show and to, I mean, you know, to overarching WWE for allowing NXT to put the focus on women. I'm so glad that it feels like standard fare, but I don't want it to just feel like standard fare and for me to not be grateful for seeing this sort of representation because it's really, really important to me. So sorry to geek out and get on my soapbox a little bit, but it was really, really cool to just see all of this. And we're getting Carmella versus Alexa Bliss next week. I'm excited for that. Like, I think Carmella is still progressing a lot. I don't know. Kenny's been kind of critical of Carmella's ring work lately, and I think it's fair. Like, I don't think she's progressed as well as some of the other women. I don't think she's bad or anything. But how do you feel about Carmella right now? Enzo and Cass aren't with her. So does that hurt her as a personality for you?
No, it doesn't hurt her. I always found their partnership a little bit ropey anyway, just because, I don't know, I just always kind of felt like the crowd were a lot more behind Enzo and Cass and they didn't really necessarily appreciate her being with them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe,
for
you know,
a while, they booed her like crazy while
cheering
them.
Yeah, so that was a bit awkward. So I think, you know, giving her some time to do her own thing is positive and it is developmental, and that's, you know, the one of the opportunity she has now is to go alone and see what she's going to do. But I do have something I want to ask you, because I think that I can't decide. I'm really torn on whether they made a bit of a mistake with how they booked the Nia Jax match on this episode, because they showed the kind of cool 35mm effect sort of recap of the match with Asuka from the end. And then the commentary team were really bigging up, you know, Nia's pissed. And then she came out and had a match that I keep going back and forth on this, but there's a part of me that thinks maybe it was too competitive.
I can see that.
And I maybe wanted a bit more. See, my problem is that I really do like Nia Jax. Like, I really, really like her. But remember we were talking about the last time we chatted NXT and I said that, you know, there was that thing where she looked a bit unsure of herself or a little bit uncomfortable or nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't think she's fully found her physical personality yet. And so, I don't know, like, I think she needs a little bit more fire under the grill. And
she needs to be a bit more ruthless.
Yeah, and she doesn't really seem that way. And what I wanted from this match, and, you know, it's not, doesn't matter what I want, but what I kind of thought I was going to get from it was a murder. I thought that Nia Jax was going to come out and murder Liv.
Right.
And she didn't. And she let her get a lot of stuff in on her, which is commendable too, because, you know, they want to build up Liv Morgan as a character as well. So that's fine. But I just wanted a bit more domineering ruthlessness from Nia Jax. And I think it's a lot to do with her face as well. Like, she sometimes looks a little bit too impassive. And, you know, she's developing. And I think one day when she gets it, she's going to be great. But she needs to go watch some of those Awesome Kong tapes, if they've got any in the back, if they've got any TNA DVDs.
Right.
But yeah, like, she just doesn't, like, sometimes she just looks like her withering stare sometimes looks like boredom.
I'll take her withering stare over the smiling. I think she's been moving away from the smiling, and I think that's part of the development that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Is she's finding her
It's fun to find her, because I feel like all the progress she's made is all in the right direction. But I think in terms of the next thing I want to see, like, I kind of wanted to just see her butcher live here, and she didn't really. And maybe just pull out a few power moves more than just her powerbomb that look brutal. And
that powerbomb was pretty great, wasn't it?
It was pretty great. When she got there, I was like, oh, I could have done with that right after the bell. And then maybe just, you know, see that, see the scream that she let out in Asuka's face before she got her head kicked off?
Yeah.
More
gave me
of
chills
that.
again seeing it in the recap.
Yeah, more of that, Nia Jax, please.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's not like the match was long, and she basically kind of did murder Liv. But, I mean, Liv got in a little bit of offense.
Yeah, she had her in, like, a headlock and stuff. I was like, I don't know if she should have.
And, like, a really crap head scissors takedown at one point. Like, I really like Liv Morgan. I think she's fun. I think she's funky. I think, you know, she has a lot of work to do still.
Yeah,
but
like, I
think
see...
she has potential.
Yeah, no, I like her. I like her, too. But, like, for example, you know, she sold that head scissor takedown thing for her, and I was like, I want to see Nia Jax like no sell it a wee bit, and just like palm her down, like no, you know, fuck
she
you.
She was off her feet a little more than I expected too. I mean, granted, it was only what like 2.5 minutes or so, but
yeah, I think
I mean,
it's
she
all
was off her feet a little more than I expected.
Yeah, it's all in the kind of body language. I think she's sort of she's a bit stumbly sometimes in the ring, and I think she just needs a bit more of a solid sort of sense of how the Nia Jax character moves around, but she'll get there. It's not really I'm not like trashing her. I'm just saying that, you know, there were some issues that I had before with her, and she's totally overcome those. Now there's some other little things she can do. I think that like, I'm really watching. I know it's like their line, so it feels like corporate, but I am enjoying watching the evolution of Nia Jax.
Oh, I really am too. And I feel like, and this is something I was talking to a girl on Twitter about, like I kind of almost feel like Nia Jax is the best non-wrestling acquisition that they've had since Charlotte.
Ah,
in terms of the female division, because I feel like Nia's progressed so much, like from her debut, which is not that long ago, really, from like smiling and, you know, trying to look creepy, but just really failing at doing so. And just, I mean, she was a lot more stumbly around the ring. I feel like she's a really nice lady, it seems like, just from Breaking Ground and whatnot. Like the implication I get is that she's a really nice lady who's trying to figure out how to be this ruthless monster. And I think she's figuring it out. And I feel like her wrestling is getting a lot better week by week. And I feel like we're seeing a lot of progression, which, again, I said in NXT, like, that's important to me, is to see a lot of this progression. So I really love it. Like, I'm digging Nia Jax. I was not 100% sold on her at first, but I friggin' love her. And I feel like her progress, because she's been doing this about 2 years now, I think, about. And that's it. And like that amount of progress in such a short period of time is pretty astounding. And I'm super excited. I mean, and when I say the best, like non-wrestler acquisition that in the female division, like that does include Carmella, that does include Alexa Bliss. And I feel like they're really great too. And I think it's just so important to me that there's a whole list of women to talk about in NXT. Like it's not like I'm saying they have like two characters. No, there are a whole bunch of them. And it's really great to see. But the final segment of the show was Shinsuke Nakamura versus Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy's challenge got answered. And it was about what I expected. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was fine. Totally fine. Main event. Let's Nakamura get a win while they talk about the fact that he's going on to fight Finn. Gives Buddy Murphy something to do. They also mentioned that they don't know where Wesley Blake is on commentary. They're like, no one's seen him. We don't know where he is. So that kind of set up some intriguing return for him, I suppose, like when they decide what they're going to do with him.
Yeah, because I mean, we're probably building toward Buddy Murphy versus Wesley Blake, which I'm probably going to be into.
Yeah, I think you might be the only one, but
I might be the only one, and I know this, and
not
I know
exactly
this.
The mega powers explode. Is it?
It's not. It'll probably be better than Jason Jordan versus Ty Dillinger.
Well, maybe
that was pretty dead in the water when they turned on each other. So I don't know. I'm just really, really into this team, and I'm getting pretty into Buddy Murphy, and I love real life cowboy Wesley Blake, and I hope he cowboys it up again, and I think that'd be great. But no, I mean, it's great to see Nakamura looking like the weird alien god man that he is, and he wins with the Kinshasa, and we go off the air, and I really liked it. I just thought that there were so many stories advanced in this episode.
Yeah, it wasn't like a blockbuster episode in the sense that it's not going to end and you're going to like start texting people saying like this is like you need to go watch this immediately, but I think it's exactly what every episode of NXT should be. There's stories, solid progression, it's a quick hour that's very, very enjoyable. Like that's what I would like more of the kind of not super important episodes to be like this one.
Yeah, and I mean, there were things on it that progressed stories, so if you didn't see this episode, you would have missed a moment in a story. Not necessarily an epic confrontation of Doom, but you would have missed a point in the story.
Yeah, it just felt like for a long time they could either do big episodes or, you know, and that was all they could do. Like, they didn't really have, you know, if something important wasn't happening, it wasn't necessarily an enjoyable hour. Like some of those post-WrestleMania episodes, so you're just like, well.
Or pre-WrestleMania episodes.
Yeah, you're kind of like, what? So you were rewarded for tuning in this week, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was a really fun hour. So thanks for reviewing it with me or running it down with me here on Inside the Ropes. I'd hate to review something.
So, yeah, no problem at all. Thank you. That is pretty much us, guys. We've done the news. We've done the NXT review. So if you're listening to us before Raw, then I hope you enjoy Raw. If you're listening to us after Raw, I hope you enjoyed Raw. And Inside the Ropes will be back with more audio content later this week.
We will indeed.
Bye-bye.